magazine. It doesn't matter what show you tune in, it's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it goes. Talk radio. Double talk is all you get, and you wanna hear it straight.
We're back. Hour two, ladies and gentlemen. Fred in Philadelphia. You're on with Dar Jamil. Hello, Fred.
Hello.
Hi.
Have you heard the BBC has reported that the U.S. will summarily kill Iranians, including diplomats, who they decide are acting as agents or just being active in Iraq and not... and against the U.S. interests.
Okay, now back this up. Who's going to kill who for what reason?
Okay. I'm a little nervous.
That's okay.
The U.S. Has declared that they will kill Iranians, and that's a broad statement. It doesn't have any qualifications like diplomatic immunity. They will kill Iranians who they decide are acting as agents in Iraq.
And let me see if they don't, is there any physical outward physical appearance that would tell you the difference between an Iraqi and an Iranian?
Well, I think that we're going to find out soon that after the fact that people maybe have been killed as a result of a claim of terrorism or support of the insurgency in Iraq. And I think, though, the people have to remember that you have the Western agents, the covert agents, moving and taking action in Iran, and have been since, I think, summer of 2005 with terrorist bombings and sabotage. So you have a hypocrisy there. We are allowed to take action against Iran by use of our agents, but Iran is not allowed to be in a support role of anyone in Iraq, and I think that this is going to start raging out of control, and that may be a pretext to take full action against Iran.
Dar, any comment on that?
Yeah, I would just add, yeah, I'm glad he brought that up. That's a really important story because it's going to have quite wide-ranging ramifications. And it was, I want to be specific, the Bush White House that gave its approval for the U.S., I would say approval, the more proper word I think would be its orders for the U.S. military to kill or capture Iranian operatives in Iraq. So, of course, they can there, it's another one of those vague terminologies where what is an Iranian operative? That doesn't even mean they have to be Iranian. So it's basically anyone at their discretion as they roll down the road. That they might decide maybe is an Iranian operative, so they have free rein, carte blanche from Mr. Bush to go ahead and kill them. So once again, it's another one of these policies that is surely to come back and haunt all of us, making every U.S. soldier in Iraq less safe, and certainly making all of us here and abroad less safe.
You know, gentlemen, to both of you, I have a hard time sometimes thinking about this president. And I still want to find reasons why he's not as evil as he really is. I have to keep reminding myself that he is, because I still can't believe what this man has done and what he continues to do. And now I understand why.
Would you enjoy a career where you pick your hours, work for who you want to, when you want to, as much as you want to? No one knows about this hidden career because there is no book, school, or teaching material available until now. Learn the trade of window painting. Window Genie is now offering a 3-day workshop on DVD that shows you how to reproduce art, text, and graphics professionally, even if you can't draw a stick man. Secrets, cheater techniques, shortcuts, tips, and tricks are all revealed. Recoup your investment in as little as one job and have a career for life. This training also gives you the skills to do regular sign work, indoor murals, and signage. Begin your new career today. Just call us at 780-457-7109 or visit us at windowgenie.com. Again, that's windowgenie, spelled J-E-A-N-N-I-E.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, we are back. Fred in Philadelphia, did you have a follow-up, sir?
I do. I just want to say that what the government appears to be doing now is manufacturing crisis and therefore manufacturing consent out of that crisis. And they're doing that because they don't have the consent of the governed, that is us. And we really do have the power to control what happens if we realize that we have to give consent in order for them to do anything. And they're manufacturing crisis after crisis. It's moving from one thing to another. It doesn't end. And the only way to change that is to basically reclaim our power.
There's a lot. It's not only the George Bush and Iraq situation and possibly Iran, but it's a whole slew of things that we've been suffering under in this country for many, many years. I thank you for your call, Fred. All right. Joan, any comment on that, Dar?
No, I mean, I agree. We're long past time of everyone getting active. And, you know, I get asked that so often in presentations I give about Iraq is, what can we do? What can we do? And I think that, you know, clearly one thing for starters is we shouldn't do what already has been done, demonstrations and letters to elected representatives and non-elected representatives alike aren't enough. They don't get the job done. So clearly, you know, things like shutting down parts of cities, non-violently, of course, but surrounding cities, shutting down ports, shutting down railroad tracks, how they're transporting weapons and personnel, just like what happened during Vietnam. Until that starts happening on a mass level, and we start really making the statement that, you know what, this country is just not going to function until you start respecting the people's wishes. And until that starts happening on a consistent, wide-scale basis, I think, unfortunately, all we can do is expect more of the same, and that's why we all need to get involved in organizing and participating in actions like that.
I couldn't agree. I want to ask a favor of you, because I have a piece here on Benjamin Friedman, and it's actually an address that he gave. And it'll take me about 10 minutes to do this, and I would beg your indulgence. And I think this, the reason I want to do this, I think it would give you a greater understanding about this Zionist issue, who's been zooming whom all these years. And I would like you to hear this and bring you back up. But first, I want to take these calls here. Let me go to Joan in New York. Hello, Joan.
Oh, hi, Mr. Statner. Well, I just want to say that I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And I just want you to know, I'll just ask my question for Mr. Dar Jamel.
Mm-hmm.
And if he knows anything about it, if he could just give me, you know, just educate me a little bit, because that's what I learned from your show. And I'll just ask my question, and then I'll just hang up.
Okay.
Okay. Back in the 60s, wasn't there an act called the White Paper Act granted to Israel from England, and it states that that land is for everyone? Oh, I will let you go now, and you have an excellent day.
Thank you. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, honey.
All right. Dar?
I'm actually not familiar with that. I'd pass that question on to you, John.
And I'm sitting here treading water. I remember what she's talking about, but I don't like to talk about things unintelligibly, and I don't like to fake it on air. But Joan, I will endeavor to dig up the information that you're talking about and make that on a further presentation for edification out there for a listening audience. That's the best I can do. I don't bluff my way through these things. If I don't know it, I'll tell you. I don't know it. All right, Greg in Nebraska. Hello, Greg.
Hi, John.
Hi.
We're being hustled over there, and I think that one caller you had just a little while ago that basically said that they want to put the threat, a terrorist fear complex into us in order to control us so that they don't need popular consent to be governed. I think he's right. And to show you the hypocrisy, John, I got a quick one for you, and then I'll get out of here. But, you know, I told you the other day I went down to the VA hospital to apply as a veteran with the old service number. Now, I was in during the time when we were, in principle, opposed to from each according to his ability to each according to his need, the old communist maxim.
Right.
Okay, well, here's what the letter from the VA said today. It said that we didn't qualify at all unless I had a need and I didn't have my ability to do anything other than the need. In other words, the communist maxim is being used by the VA to give me my benefits if I want them. In other words, if I have the means to do it on my own, then I will be on my own until I qualify by being so poor that I'm on the welfare system. Now, in that letter, here's the kicker. In that letter, guess what I got? I got a ribbon that says "Support Our Troops." Can you imagine that? That I must not be classified a troop. Because they sent a letter, a little ribbon with it, the magnetic ribbon that you put on your car, support our troops. What hypocrisy. When those guys come back from Iraq, they're going to be getting the same letter I got, only it'll be down the road a few years.
If they're
with
alive.
The ribbon in it.
If they're alive to receive.
Yeah, if they're alive. They're being sucker punched over there. We don't have a clue what the agenda is over there that's causing these kids to get killed. It's never been explained to us. I got a hunch. I still think it's the oil deal, because they're doing contracts like mad internationally for oil pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
So the American people, it's pathetic. What can you say? You become tongue-tied with what they're doing to the American people, and the American people either are ignoring it or have their hands tied to get out there and get it done. One of these days we're going to be on our back. I guess that's when we're going to have to do it, whether we like it or not. Thank you, John.
There we go. Okay. for some reason, I could not hear myself. Okay. At any rate, I want to do this, Dar, and if you would, sir, I beg your indulgence for about 10 minutes.
I'd love to.
Okay. This is Benjamin Friedman, a Jewish defector warns America. Now, here's an introductory note to this. Benjamin H. Friedman was one of the most intriguing and amazing individuals of the 20th century. Born in 1890, he was a successful Jewish businessman of New York City, at one time principal owner of the Woodbury Soap Company. He broke with organized Jewry after the Judeo-Communist victory of 1945 and spent the remainder of his life and the great preponderance of his considerable fortune, at least $2.5 million, that was a lot back then, folks, exposing the Jewish tyranny which has enveloped the United States. Mr. Friedman knew what he was talking about because he had been an insider at the highest levels of Jewish organizations and Jewish mechanizations to gain power over our country. Mr. Friedman was personally acquainted with Bernard Baruch, Samuel Untermyer, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, and many more movers and shakers of our times. This speech was given before a patriotic audience in 1961 at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C., on behalf of the Condi McGinley's patriotic newspaper at that time, Common Sense. Though in some minor ways this wide-ranging and speech, let me just skip the word, has become dated, Mr. Friedman's essential message to us, his warning to the West, is more urgent than ever before. This is what he said at this speech. Here in the United States, the Zionists and their co-religionists have complete control of our government. For many reasons, too many and too complex to go into here at this time, the Zionists and their co-religionists rule these United States as though they were the absolute monarchs of this country. Now, you may say that it's a very broad statement, but let me show you what happened while we were all asleep. What happened? World War I broke out in the summer of 1914. There are a few people here my age who remember that. Now that war was waged on one side by Great Britain, France, and Russia, and on the other side by Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Turkey. Within 2 years, Germany had won that war, not only won it nominally, but won it actually. The German submarines, which were a surprise to the world, had swept all convoys from the Atlantic Ocean. Great Britain stood there without ammunition for her soldiers, with 1 week's food supply, and after that, starvation. At that time, the French army had mutinied. They had lost 600,000 men, the flower of the French youth in the defense of Verdun on the Somme. The Russian army was defecting. They were picking up their toys and going home. They didn't want to play war anymore. They didn't like the Tsar, and the Italian army had collapsed. Not a shot had been fired on German soil. Not one enemy soldier had crossed the border into Germany. And yet, Germany was offering England peace terms. They offered England a negotiated peace on what the lawyers call a status quo ante basis. That means, let's call the war off and let everything be as it was before the war started. England, in the summer of 1916, was considering that, seriously. They had no choice. It was either accepting this negotiated peace that Germany was offering or going on with the war and being totally defeated. Now, while that was going on, the Zionists in Germany, who represented the Zionists from Eastern Europe, went to British War Cabinet and, I am going to be brief because it's a long story, but I have all the documents to prove any statement that I make. They said, look here, you can't win this war, you don't have to give up, you don't have to accept the negotiated peace offered to you by Germany, you can win this war if the United States will come in as your ally. Now, the United States was not in war at the time. We were fresh, we were young, we were rich, we were powerful. They told England, we will guarantee to bring the United States into the war as your ally to fight with you on your side if you will promise us Palestine after you win the war. I'll continue this on the other side and get our comments from our guest today, Mr. Dar Jamil. We'll be right back. I'll find my tongue during this break. We'll continue right after this.
Yeah. Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you're mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning, and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc.'s patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, call 702-953-0267 or visit www.lasermedinc.com. That's www.lasermedinc.com or call 702-953-0267.
In other words, they made this deal, and this is Benjamin Friedman at this speech. We will get the United States into this war as your ally. The price you must pay is Palestine after you've won the war and defeated Germany, Austria and Hungary, and Turkey. Now, England had as much right to promise Palestine to anybody as the United States would have to promise Japan to Ireland for any reason whatsoever. It's absolutely absurd that Great Britain, that never had any connection or any interest or any right in what is known as Palestine, should offer it as coin of the realm to pay the Zionists for bringing the United States into the war. However, they did make that promise in October of 1916. And shortly after that, I don't know how many here remembered, he says, the United States, which was almost totally pro-German, entered the war as Britain's ally. I say that the United States was almost totally pro-German because the newspapers here were controlled by the Jews. The bankers were Jews. All the media of mass communications in this country were controlled by the Jews. And they, the Jews, were pro-German. They were pro-German because many of them had come from Germany. And also they wanted to see Germany lick the Tsar. The Jews didn't like the Tsar and they didn't want Russia to win the war. These German Jew bankers like Kuhn and Loeb and other big banking firms inside the United States refused to finance France or England to the extent of $1. They stood aside and they said, as long as France and England are tied up with Russia, not 1 cent. But they poured money into Germany and fought beside Germany against Russia trying to lick the Tsarist regime. Now those same Jews, when they saw the possibility of getting Palestine, went to England and made this deal. At the time, everything changed, like a traffic light that changes from red to green. Where the newspapers had been all pro-German, they'd been telling the people of the difficulties that Germany was having fighting Great Britain commercially, and in other respects, all of a sudden the Germans were no good. They were villains. They were Huns. They were shooting Red Cross nurses. They were cutting off babies' hands. They were no good. Shortly after that, Mr. Wilson declared war on Germany. The Zionists in London had sent cables to the United States to Justice Brandeis saying, "Go to work on President Wilson. We're getting from England what we want. Now you go to work on President Wilson and get the United States into that war." That's how the United States got into the war. We had no more interest in it. We had no more right to be in it than we have to be on the moon tonight instead of this room. There was absolutely no reason for World War I to be our war. We were railroaded into it, and if I can be vulgar, we were suckered into it, he says. That war merely so that the Zionists of the world could obtain Palestine. That is something that the people of the United States have never been told. They never knew why we went into World War I. After we got into the war, the Zionists went to Great Britain and they said, "Well, we performed our part of the agreement. Let's have something in writing that shows that you're going to keep your bargain and give us Palestine after you win the war." They didn't know whether the war would last another year or 10 years, so they started to work out a receipt. The receipt took the form of a letter, which was worded in very cryptic language so the world at large wouldn't know what it was all about, and that was called the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was merely Great Britain's promise to pay the Zionists what they had agreed upon as a consideration for getting the United States into the war. So this great Balfour Declaration that you hear so much about is just as phony as a $3 bill. I don't think I could make it any more emphatic than that. That is where all the trouble started. The United States got into the war. The United States crushed Germany. You know what happened. When the war ended, the Germans went to Paris for the Paris Peace Conference in 1919. There were 117 Jews there as a delegation representing the Jews headed by Bernard Baruch. I was there. I ought to know. Now what happened? The Jews were at the Peace Conference. When they were cutting up Germany and parceling out Europe to all these nations who claimed the right to a certain part of European territory, said, "How about Palestine for us?" And they produced, for the first time, to the knowledge of the Germans, this Balfour Declaration. So the Germans, for the first time, realized, oh, so that's the game. That's why the United States came into the war. The Germans, for the first time, realized that they were defeated. They suffered the terrific reparations that were slapped onto them because the Zionists wanted Palestine and were determined to get it at any cost. That brings us to another very interesting point. When the Germans realized this, they naturally resented it. Up to that time, the Jews had never been better off in any country in the world than they had been in Germany. You had Mr. Rathenau there, who was maybe 100 times more as important in industry and finance as is Bernard Baruch in this country. You had Mr. Ballen, who owned two big steamship lines, the North German Lloyds and Hamburg American Lines. You had Mr. Bleirotter, who was the banker for the, I do believe this is Holzhauerin family. You had the Warburgs in Hamburg. You were the big merchant bankers, the biggest in the world. The Jews were doing very well in Germany, no question about that. The Germans felt, well, that was quite a sellout. It was a sellout that might be compared to the hypothetical situation. Suppose the United States was at war with the Soviet Union, and we were winning. And we told the Soviet Union, well, let's quit. We offer you peace terms. Let's forget the whole thing. And all of a sudden, Red China came into the war as an ally of the Soviet Union. And throwing them into the war brought about our defeat, a crushing defeat, with reparations the likes of which man's imagination cannot encompass. Imagine then, after that defeat, if we found out it was the Chinese in this country, our Chinese citizens, who all the time we had thought were loyal citizens working with us, were selling us out to the Soviet Union. And that was through them that the Red China was brought into the war against us. How would you feel then if the United States, in the United States against Chinese? I don't think that one of them would dare show his face on any street. There wouldn't be enough convenient lamppost to take care of them. Imagine how we would feel. I will continue with this on the other side of the break and then get the response from Dar Jamail on this issue. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYwellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
Well, that's how the Germans felt towards these Jews. They'd been so nice to them from 1905 on, when the first communist revolution in Russia failed and the Jews had to scramble out of Russia. They all went to Germany, and Germany gave them refuge, and they were treated very nicely. And here they had sold Germany down the river for no reason at all, other than the fact that they wanted Palestine or a so-called Jewish commonwealth. Now, Nahum Sokolov, all the great leaders and the great names that you read about in connection with Zionism today, in 1919, 1920, 1921, 1922, and in 1923, wrote in all of their papers, and the press was filled with their statements, with a feeling against the Jews in Germany is due to the fact that they realized that this great defeat was brought about by Jewish intercession in bringing the United States into the war. The Jews themselves admitted that. It wasn't that the Germans in 1919 discovered that a glass of Jewish blood tasted better than Coca-Cola or beer. There was no religious feeling. There was no sentiment against those people merely on account of their religious belief. It was all political. It was economic. It was anything but religious. Nobody cared in Germany whether a Jew went home and pulled down the shades and said, Shema Yisrael, or Our Father. Nobody cared in Germany any more than they do in the United States. Now, this feeling that developed later in Germany was due to one thing, the German held the Jews responsible for their crushing defeat. And World War I had just been started against Germany for no reason for which Germany was responsible for. They were guilty of nothing, only of being successful. They built up a big navy. They built up world trade. You must remember that Germany at the time of the French Revolution consisted of 300 small city-states, principalities, dukedoms, and so forth. 300 separate little political entities. And between that time, between the times of Napoleon and Bismarck, they were consolidated into one state. And within 50 years, they became one of the world's great powers. This navy was rivaling Great Britain's. They were doing business all over the world. They could undersell anybody. They could make better products. What happened as a result of that? There was a conspiracy between England, France, and Russia to slap down Germany. There isn't one historian in the world who can find a valid reason why these three countries decided to wipe Germany off the map politically. When Germany realized that the Jews were responsible for her defeat, they naturally resented it. But not a hair on the head of any Jew was harmed, not a single hair. Professor Tansel of Georgetown University, who had access to all secret papers of the State Department, wrote in his book and quoted from the State Department document written by Hugo Schoenfeld, a Jew whom Cordell Hull sent to Europe in 1933 to investigate the so-called camps of political prisoners, who wrote back that he found them in a very fine condition. They were in excellent shape, with everybody treated well, and they were filled with communists. Well, a lot of them were Jews, because the Jews happened to compromise about 98% of the communists in Europe at that time. And there was some priests there, and ministers, and labor leaders, and masons, and others who had international affiliations. Some background is in order. In 1918 and 1919, the communists took over Bavaria for a few days. Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht and a group of other Jews took over the government for 3 days. In fact, when the Kaiser ended the war, he fled to Holland because he thought the communists were going to take over Germany, as they did Russia, and that he was going to meet the same fate as the Tsar. So he fled to Holland for safety, for security. After the communist threat in Germany was quashed, the Jews were still working, trying to get back to their former status, and the Germans fought them in every way they could without hurting a single hair on anybody's head. They fought them in the same way that in this country the prohibitionists fought anyone who was interested in liquor. They didn't fight one another with pistols. Well, that's the way they were fighting the Jews in Germany. And at the time, mind you, there were 80 to 90 million Germans, and there were only 460,000 Jews. About one-half of 1% of the population of Germany were Jews. And yet they controlled all the press, they controlled most of the country, because they had come in with cheap money when the mark was devalued and bought up practically everything. The Jews tried to keep a lid on this fact. They didn't want the world to really understand they had sold out Germany, and that the Germans resented that. The Germans took appropriate action against the Jews. They, shall I say, discriminated against them whenever they could. They shunned them the same way we would shun the Chinese or the Negroes or the Catholics or anyone in this country who had sold us out to an enemy who brought about our defeat. After a while, the Jews of the world called a meeting in Amsterdam. Jews from every country in the world attended this meeting in July of 1933. And they said to Germany, "You fire Hitler, you put every Jew back into his former position, whether he's a communist or no matter what he was. You can't treat us that way, and we, the Jews of the world, are serving an ultimatum upon you." You can imagine what the Germans told them. So what did Jews do? In 1933, when Germany refused to surrender the World Conference of Jews in Amsterdam, the conference broke up. And Mr. Samuel Untermeyer, who was the head of the American delegation and president of the whole conference, came to the United States and went from the steamer to the studios of Columbia Broadcasting System and made a radio broadcast throughout the United States in which he, in effect, said, "The Jews of the world now declare a holy war against Germany. We are now engaged in a sacred conflict against the Germans. We are going to starve them into surrender. We are going to use worldwide boycott against them. That will destroy them because they are dependent upon their export business." And in fact, that two-thirds of Germany's food supply had to be imported, and it could only be imported with the proceeds of what they exported. So if Germany could not export, two-thirds of Germany's population would have to starve. There was not just enough food for more than one-third of the population. Now, in this declaration, which I have here, and which was printed in the New York Times on August 7th of 1933, Mr. Samuel Untermyer boldly stated that this economic boycott is our means of self-defense. President Roosevelt has advocated its use in the National Recovery Administration, which some of you may remember, where everybody was to be boycotted unless he followed the rules laid down by the New Deal, and which was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court at that time. Nevertheless, the Jews of the world declared a boycott against Germany, and it was so effective that you couldn't find one thing in any store anywhere in the world with the words "Made in Germany" on it. In fact, an executive of the Woolworth Company told me that they had to dump millions of dollars worth of crockery and dishes into the river, that their stores were boycotted. If anyone came in and found a dish mark "Made in Germany," they were picketed with signs saying "Hitler," "Murderer," and so forth, something like these sit-ins that are taking place in the South. At a store belonging to R.H. Macy chain, which was controlled by a family called Strauss, who also happened to be Jews, a woman found stockings which came from Schmintz, marked "Made in Germany." Well, they were cotton stockings, and they have been there for 20 years. Since I've been observing women's legs for many years, it's been a long time since I've seen any cotton stockings on them. I saw Macy's boycotted, with hundreds of people walking around with signs saying "Murderers," "Hitlerites," and so forth. Now, up to that time, not one hair on the head of any Jew had been hurt in Germany. There was no suffering, there was no starvation, there was no murder, there was nothing. Naturally, the Germans said, "Who are these people to declare a boycott against us and throw all the people out of work and make our industries come to a standstill? Who are they to do that to us?" They naturally resented it. Certainly, they painted swastikas on stores owned by Jews. Why should a German go into and give money to a storekeeper as part of a boycott that was going to starve Germany into surrendering to the Jews of the world, who were going to dictate who their premier or chancellor was to be? Mr. Friedman said, "Well, it was ridiculous." The boycott continued for some time, but it wasn't until 1938, when a young Jew from Poland walked into a German embassy in Paris and shot a German official, that the Germans really started to get rough with the Jews in Germany. And you found them then breaking windows and having street fights and so forth. Now, I don't like to use the word anti-Semitism because it's meaningless, but it means something to you still, so I have to use it. The only reason that there was any feeling in Germany against Jews was that they were responsible for World War I and this worldwide boycott. Ultimately, they were also responsible for World War II, because after this thing got out of hand, it was absolutely necessary for the Jews and Germany to lock horns in a war to see which one was going to survive. In the meanwhile, I had lived in Germany, and I knew the Germans had decided that Europe is going to be Christian or communist. There's no in-between. And the Germans decided that they were going to keep it Christian if possible, and they started to rearm. In November of 1933, the United States recognized the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was becoming very powerful, and Germany realized that our turn was going to come soon unless we are strong. The same as we in this country are saying today, our turn is going to come soon unless we are strong. Our government is spending $83 or $84 billion for defense. Defense against whom? Defense against 40,000 little Jews in Moscow that took over Russia, and then, in their devious ways, took control of many other countries of the world. For this country now to be on the verge of a third world war, from which we cannot emerge a victor, is something that staggers my imagination. I know that nuclear bombs are measured in terms of megatons. A megaton is a term used to describe 1 million tons of TNT. Our nuclear bombs had a capacity of 10 megatons, or 10 million tons of TNT, when they were first developed. Now the nuclear bombs are developed have the capacity of 200 megatons, and God knows how many more megatons the nuclear bombs of the Soviet Union have. What do we face now? If we trigger a world war that may develop into a nuclear war, humanity is finished. Why might such a war take place? It will take place as the curtain goes up on Act 3. Act 1 was World War I. Act 2 was World War II. Act 3 is going to be World War III. The Jews of the world, the Zionists and their co-religionists everywhere, are determined that they are going to again use the United States to help them permanently retain Palestine as their foothold for their world government. That is just as true as I'm standing here. Not alone have I read it, but many here have also read it, and it is known all over the world. What are we going to do? The life you save may be your son's. Your boys may be on the way to that war tonight. And you don't know it any more than you knew in 1916 in London that the Zionists made a deal with the British War Cabinet to send your sons to war in Europe. Did you know it at the time? Not a person inside the United States knew it. You were permitted to know it. You weren't permitted to know it, rather. Who knew it? President Wilson knew it. Colonel Mandel House knew it. Other insiders knew it. Did I know it? I had a pretty good idea of what was going on. I was liaison to Henry Morgenthau, Sr. in the 1912 campaign when President Wilson was elected, and there was talk around the office there. I was confidential man to Henry Morgenthau, Sr., who was chairman of the Finance Committee, and I was liaison between him and Rollo Wells, the treasurer. So I sat in these meetings with President Wilson at the head of the table, and all others, and I heard them drum into President Wilson's brain the graduated income tax and what has become the Federal Reserve. And I heard them indoctrinate him with the Zionist movement. Justice Brandeis and President Wilson were just as close as two fingers of this hand. President Wilson was just as incompetent when it came to determining what was going on as a newborn baby. This is how they got us into World War I while we all slept. They sent our boys over there to be slaughtered. For what? So the Jews can have Palestine as their commonwealth? They've fooled you so much that you don't know whether you're coming or you're going. I'm going to finish up here with this in a minute. Now, any judge, when he charges a jury, says, gentlemen, any witness who you find has told a single lie, you can disregard all of his testimony. I don't know what state you come from, but in New York State, that is the way a judge addresses a jury. If that witness told one lie, disregard his testimony. What are the facts about the Jews? I call them Jews to you because they are known as Jews. I don't call them Jews myself. I refer to them as so-called Jews because I know what they are. The Eastern European Jews, who form 92% of the world's population, of those who call themselves Jews, were originally Khazars. They were a warlike tribe who lived deep in the heart of Asia. And they were so warlike that even the Asiatics drove them out of Asia into Eastern Europe. They were set up a large Khazar kingdom of 800,000 square miles. At the time, Russia didn't even exist, nor did any other European countries. The Khazar kingdom was the biggest country in all of Europe, so big and so powerful that when the other monarchs wanted to go to war, the Khazars would lend them 40,000 soldiers. That's how big and powerful they were. They were phallic worshippers, which is filthy, and I don't want to go into the details of that now. But that was their religion. And it was also the religion of many other pagans and barbarians elsewhere in the world. The Khazar king became so disgusted with the degeneracy of the kingdom that he decided to adopt the so-called monotheistic faith, either Christianity, Islam, or what is known today as Judaism, which is really Talmudism. By spinning a top and calling out eeny, meeny, miny, mo, he picked out the so-called Judaism, and that became the state religion. He sent down to the Talmudic schools of, and I think this is pronounced Pumbetia and Sura, and brought up thousands of rabbis and opened up synagogues and schools, and his people became what we call Jews. There wasn't one of them who had an ancestor who ever put a toe in the Holy Land, not only in Old Testament history, but back to the beginning of time. Not one of them. And yet they come to the Christians and ask us to support their armed insurrections in Palestine by saying, you want to help repatriate God's chosen people to the Promised Land? Their ancestral home, don't you? It's your Christian duty. We gave you one of our boys as your Lord and Savior. Now you go to church on Sunday and you kneel and worship a Jew, and we're Jews. But they are pagan Khazars who were converted just the same as the Irish were converted. It's ridiculous to call them people of the Holy Land, as it would be called 54 million Chinese Muslims, Arabs. Muhammad only died in 1620 AD, and since the 54 million Chinese have accepted Islam as their religious belief. Now imagine, in China, 2,000 miles away from Arabia, from Mecca, from Muhammad's birthplace, imagine if the 54 million Chinese decided to call themselves Arabs. You would say that they were lunatics. Anybody who believes that 54 million Chinese are Arabs must be crazy. All they did was adopt as a religious faith a belief that had its origins in Mecca in Arabia. The same as the Irish. When the Irish became Christians, nobody dumped them in the ocean and imported to the Holy Land a new crop of inhabitants. They hadn't become a different people. They were the same people, but they hadn't accepted Christianity as a religious faith. These Khazars, these pagans, these Asiatics, these Turco-Finns, were a Mongoloid race who were forced out of Asia into Eastern Europe because their king took the Talmudic faith. They had no choice in the matter, just the same as in Spain. If the king was Catholic, everybody had to be Catholic. If not, you had to get out of Spain. So the Khazars become what we call today Jews. Now imagine how silly it is for the great Christian countries of the world to say, we're going to use our power and our prestige to repatriate God's chosen people to their ancestral homeland, their promised land. Could there be a bigger lie than that? Because they control the newspapers, the magazines, the radio, the television, the book publishing businesses, and because they have ministers in the pulpit and the politicians on soapboxes talking the same language. It's not too surprising that you believe that lie. You believe black is white? If you heard it often enough, you would call black, you wouldn't call black black anymore. You'd start calling black white, and nobody could blame you. This is one of the great lies of history. It is the foundation of all the misery that has befallen the world. Do you know what the Jews on the Day of Atonement that you think is so sacred to them? I was one of them. This is not hearsay. I'm not here to be a rabble-rouser. I'm here to give you facts. When on the Day of Atonement you walk into a synagogue, you stand up for the very first prayer that you recite. It's the only prayer for which you stand. You repeat three times a short prayer called Nidre, Kol Nidre. In that prayer, you enter into an agreement with God Almighty that any oath, vow, or pledge that you make during the next 12 months shall be null and void. The oath shall not be an oath. The vow shall not be a vow. The pledge shall not be a pledge. They shall have no force or effect. And further, the Talmud teaches that whenever you take an oath, vow, or pledge, you are to remember the Kol Nidre prayer that you recited on the Day of Atonement, and you are exempted from fulfilling them. How much can you depend on their loyalty? You can depend upon their loyalty as much as Germans depended upon it in 1916. We are going to suffer the same fate as Germany suffered, and for the same reason. Dar Jamal, I just read you something that Benjamin Friedman said in front of a crowd in 1961, and this man was connected. We are still feeling the ramifications of this today in Palestine, in Israel today. Your comments on this, sir?
I don't really know what to say. I think that really covers it extremely well. I had read bits and pieces of that history through my research, working on stories and educating myself about the situation in the Middle East. But I think that really sums it up. I think it's just, you know, we you and I and others like us in the trenches of the information war, we know that we are up against this machine that is in control of the media, and where is all the funding for our politicians coming? And why our so-called interests in the Middle East are completely in alignment with those of the state of Israel and what's really driving that state. And when we hear all of that astounding and horrible history that you just read and then go into describing present-day circumstances, it's so clear and it makes so much sense of this is kind of the end game of that project of now we're in sort of going into the final stage of total liquidation of the Palestinian people, fomenting civil war between Hamas and Fatah in Gaza right now as we speak. There's mass kidnappings, mass killings, areas being further sealed off by the Israeli military with the wall. It's just really astounding. And I'm just really grateful that we have things like the information you just read, other scholars on the topic, to really clarify what is exactly going on here and get real clear on who needs to be dealt with and probably how if we're going to remedy the situation that afflicts this country. Because until this country frees itself completely from the Israeli agenda and this negative, I'm being very diplomatic here, but their negative goals of and plans in the Middle East, until this country's freed of that, the evil that it is, the constant violations of international law, we will go down with that ship.
And Dar, I don't think there's a person alive today, and I certainly don't feel this way, even though what I just read, and history facts speak for themselves. The question was asked of me one day, well, what are you going to do with 6 million Jews? Well, why do we need to do anything? They've established Israel. They have made many forays against their neighbors to occupy them, to destroy them, to try to topple governments around them. They're now using the United States to do it. And is this possibly World War III that we're talking about? Because, ladies and gentlemen, the global order out there, their design is to have a one-world order of communist design. You mean, we can be nice about it and call it socialism, but it's going to be an unholy alliance between the international banksters, government, and business. And who the handmaidens are to foist this thing upon us and convince us that all is well is the very same media that Mr. Benjamin Friedman talked about in this country being wholly owned in 1961. Here we are how many years later, and we're seeing almost the onset of World War III upon us right now. Dar, I weep for the world, my friend. I weep for their ignorance. I weep for those that have been jumping on board, not standing up for freedom and liberty and man's dignity and the sanctity. I get so exasperated because, you know, was Benjamin Friedman a self-hating Jew? I don't think so. He saw it literally from the inside. The inside out. He was dealing with the very same people that are architects of what you're seeing going on today. 10 years ago, Dar, I had a talk with a group of rabbis, and I had been warned several times to stop talking about the Zionist. And I asked them why. And they told me that, well, you're a little white Christian guy. Do you want to be nailed up on the cross like Jesus Christ was? And I said, you're not putting him in the same boat as Jesus Christ, are you? The Son of God, don't put me there. They said, no, you're misunderstanding. We're just saying that the forces will move against you. The very same forces that were around 2,000 years ago that destroyed Jesus Christ, it doesn't matter how it comes to you, but it will destroy you. Then I asked them the question, do you realize that you have a problem? They said, yes, we do realize we have a problem. And I said, don't let the skinny white Christian guy then do it. You guys clean your own house out. We have seen the onset of the worldwide organization that is against Zionism. NK Nutricarte. Go to the site, folks. Read it for yourself. For God's sakes, please. NKUSA. These are Torah conservative-believing Jews that live inside this country that have been telling the entire world that Israel should not be. This is not our religion. God promised us our homeland, our country, when He comes, when the Messiah comes. For God's sakes, let's stop this. No more wars for Israel. No more support. I'll be in support of their homeland if they'll leave the Palestinians alone. I'll be in support of Israel if they leave their Arab neighbors alone. But my God in heaven, folks, they're getting ready to start World War III, and you're sitting back and you're afraid to stand in the light and make your statement clear. The time is now. Dar Jamel, I didn't mean to get all emotional on you, but my God, I'm seeing this stuff build. I've seen hundreds of thousands of people killed for no damn good reason at all, and I'm sick of it. I weep for them.
But you don't need to apologize to me, John. There's just too much at stake, and I really appreciate your efforts to keep educating people as to how and why all of this is taking place.
Dar, I appreciate you coming on the program, my friend. We will have you back real soon. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you Monday, folks. I don't think there's anything else left to say. We'll just see you Monday.